90. All right. It's approximately 90 years after the first Aliyah that Ezra is finally going to come. And the Gemara indeed tells us that as long as his Rebbe was alive, Baruch ben Neria, who had been the student of Yirmiyahu, as long as his Rebbe was alive, he didn't leave Bavel. Following the passing of his Rebbe, he felt that the way was open for him to go on Aliyah. Nehemiah is going to come on Aliyah 12 years after Ezra. 12 years after Ezra. But now what we're going to learn in this chapter is, number one, we're going to find out who is Ezra, and that's extremely important. Not only who is Ezra, but Ezra is going to receive permission from Artaxasta. This is the third permission that's granted. And maybe in order to differentiate what's happening now over what had happened before, is if we use the term power. Ezra is going to be granted power, while Zerubbabel and Sheshbatzar, those who had come as a result of permission granted by Koresh and Daryavesh, were granted limited permission, but were never given any kind of power. Ezra is going to be given power. Now the power that he's going to be given, and you're going to see it clearly in the letter of intent given by Artaxasta, he is given power, but his power is only of a religious nature. He is not given political power. Political power, nobody is going to grant Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. They're going to take it themselves in bitter battle against Greece. The Hashmonaim are ultimately going to achieve political autonomy. No, not autonomy, I'm sorry, not that word. Political sovereignty. Political sovereignty is first going to be achieved by the Hashmonaim. That's going to be 150 years at least after Jews have returned to Eretz Yisrael. It's going to take them 150 years until they receive take political power, achieve sovereignty as a nation. Yes, Sora.
How many Sakaria, were they part of the people that were exiled to Babel, and so when did they come back, did they encourage people?
It would seem that Haggai Zechariah were from the Golim. Yes, they were from the ones who went in exile, and then they came back to Eretz Yisrael. Well, yes.
On the first way.
I'm not sure.
Well, they were there to encourage the people at the beginning.
No, they weren't there to encourage. No.
Where did they encourage the people? In Babel?
No, in Eretz Yisrael. The Nevi'im, Haggai and Zechariah were in Eretz Yisrael. And it seems to me, approximately at the time of the permission that's granted by Daryavesh, which is in the year 520, and they come and they tell them that the reason why the economy of the country is shot, the reason why there are so many problems, is because you have been lax in the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. He encourages them to build it, complete the building, and they do in fact complete it.
Nobody
knows
when they came back to Israel.
I don't know if we have to know. I mean, I don't know. We'll look. We'll see. Yes, that's why it's in Eretz Yisrael. That's precisely why I said that they were saying prophecy in Eretz Yisrael. Though, of course, remember, Yechezkel was saying Nevuah in Chutz Haaretz because it was because of Eretz Yisrael. So technically they also could have been saying Nevuah. But we know that Haggai and Zechariah were in Eretz Yisrael. Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi were in Eretz Yisrael. They may appear in one of the lists. We will watch our lists of Olim because it's very fascinating. There are going to be a number of lists where each head of a family and the members of his family that came in Aliyah have become part of the sanctity of Tanakh forever and ever after. That's the extent to which Klal Yisrael was indebted to them, to those families that went on Aliyah. Oh wait, yes, Rhoda.
Oh no, I went to turn on the heat.
Oh, I thought you raised your hand.
Yeah, well, I was going to get permission.
You were going to get permission. Instead of permission, you assumed power. She put on the heat without in consultation with the. With the associate dean. Okay, that's good. Yeah.
Haggai and Zechariah were not around at the time of Ezra?
They may very well have overlapped. I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to figure out. I don't know if it says any place how long Haggai and Zechariah lived. Remember, there is an opinion that says Malachi. There is one opinion that says Malachi Ze Ezra. There's an opinion in the Gemara in Megillah that says that Malachi, the last of the Nevi'im, is Ezra. So then there is a prophet. I mean, and Ezra is the prophet. But that's not accepted by all. All right, let's go. The Achar Hadvarim Ha'ele. Chapter 7. The Achar Hadvarim Ha'ele. After these things, it really means 57 years later. 57 years later. That is 57 years after Haggai and Zechariah had encouraged the people to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, and they did it. We are now in the kingdom of Artaxasta, king of Persia. Now, by the way, one thing you have to know is that Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah are not a history in the commonly accepted sense of the word. Because there are three kings that are mentioned in total here: Cyrus, Darius, and Artaxasta. There were kings in between whose accomplishments or the problems they created in the Middle East shook the Middle East to its very core. There were wars, there were upheavals. It's such a geton in the Middle East of Tishin and of Beni. Now, I cannot translate that. Things were going on tables and chairs, a Yiddish expression. There were tremendous upheavals of political nature. Those don't appear in Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah. In Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah, the three kings that are important are the three kings that have granted permission. Now, Artaxasta's permission is going to be of a completely different nature than the two that preceded it. Ezra is going to elicit from the king something that neither one of the two previous kings did. Now watch. V'achan hadvarim ha'ela. After these things, the Malchut Artaxasta, during the kingdom of Artaxasta, king of Persia, Ezra. Ezra is being introduced in an unusual way. Ezra is being introduced 10 generations of his... Is it 10? Was it 15? Let's see. Ezra, ben Seroya, ben Azariah, ben Chilkiah, ben Shalom, ben Sadok, ben Achitov, ben Amariah, ben Azariah, ben Meroyot, ben Zerachiah, ben Uzi, ben Buki, ben Avishua, ben Pinchos, ben Elazar, ben Aaron HaKohen, 15 generations. Yeah.
At least
So first of all, the Mepharshim say it cannot be that 600 years there were no 600. We're talking about going back to Aaron HaKohen. It had to be much more than 15 generations, and only selected generations are mentioned. It can't be. It's not humanly possible. We're talking of a span of what, 1,000 years, more than 1,000 years. Can't be that there are just 15 generations. Now, I don't really believe that there's anybody else in Tanakh who is given this kind of an introduction. Huh? At the end of Sefer Rut. I'm going to take a guess off the top of my head. There are no 15 generations there.
No, there aren't.
There aren't. Okay, good. I thought you were disagreeing with me. And that got my dander up. Okay. So in other words, I still can say that there is no one who is introduced in the way in which Ezra is introduced. When we get to the two sheets that I gave you, you'll begin to find out why it is that Ezra is introduced in this manner. For example, just to take the Gemara that says, would Torah not have been given by Moshe? It would have been given by Ezra. In other words, Chazal saw Ezra as nearly Moshe. Nearly Moshe puts Ezra in a class all by himself. We're going to find later on in the Gemara, for example, Hillel. Hillel is introduced as 10th generation Ezra. Hillel, 10th generation Ezra. Who Ezra? Olami Pavel. This is Ezra who came up from Pavel. V'hu sofer mahir b'torat Moshe. One word is going to be terribly important. And you will see during the course of the chapter the meaning of the word sofer. Ezra is called Ezra HaSofer. Now there is a limited, very specific meaning of the word sofer, which means, as we know, a sofer. He's not a sofer. He is not a scribe who writes Sefer Torah, Tefillin, Umezuzas. The term sofer, and we will prove it from five or six psukim in this chapter, represents a man of unusual and exceptional scholarship and piety. At one point, the Gemara wants to say that, you know, Torah was that precious to him that he counted. Every letter was counted and weighed. Ezra is the outstanding Talmud Chacham, not only of his generation, but of many generations. And that's what the word sofer is going to be. And you'll see. V'hu sofer mahir. Mahir, of course, means an expert, the Torah Moshe. In the Torah of Moshe. Ashenatan Hashem Elokei Yisrael, that the God of Israel had given. Vayiten lo hamelech. The king gave to him power, as I say. Kiyad Hashem Elokav Olav Kol Bakashato. This was as a gift from God, his God. Everything that Ezra asked for, Ezra received. We will even see that there are things that Ezra, with all that he receives, there are certain things that he is afraid to ask or doesn't want to ask. But everything else that he wants, he receives. We're going to find out in a little while what kind of power is granted to him. Completely different than all that preceded him. But first, the story. Vayalum ibnei Yisrael umen ha-kohanim va-levim va-mishorim va-shoarim va-netinim el Yerushalayim v'shnat sheva l'artachshasta ha-melech. They went up from the children of Israel, the Kohanim, the Levim, the ones who, in the Levim, there were those who sang in the Beis HaMikdash, there were those who were the Shoarim in charge of the gates, the Hanatinim, those were the ones who did the menial labor in the Beis HaMikdash to Yerushalayim, in the seventh year of Artashasta the king. Vayavor Yerushalayim, Dachodesh HaChamishi, he arrived in Yerushalayim on the fifth month, the month of Av, Hishnat HaShviyat LaMelech, seventh year of the king. Ki Be'echod LaChodesh HaRishon, Hu Yisud Hama'alemi Babel. The first day of the month of Nisan, that's 5 months earlier. Right? Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, 4 months earlier. 4 months earlier. On the first day of the month of Nisan, Yisud, he laid the foundation for the wave of Aliyah from Babel. And on the first day, Rosh Chodesh Av, he came to Yerushalayim. Very nice. Kiyad lekov hatova alav. This is an expression that's going to be repeated a number of times. He comes the echad hachodesh hachamishi, the first day of Av, with the goodness of God upon him. All of a sudden, it just occurred to me now. How many times do I tell you in each year that it's so good that I'm teaching? I'm saying it to you because things occur to me as I teach that never occurred to me while I'm preparing this year. In what respect was that day a significant day for Ezra? I'll give you a hint. Queenie Panas. Huh? Of? Who? Say. Right.
Oh.
Rosh Chodesh Av is the Yortzeit of Aaron HaKohen. Where does Ezra come from? Ezra is a direct descendant of Aaron HaKohen. He arrives, he plans it to arrive in Yerushalayim. He had a minion with him all the way. I understand there were a few thousand people. I imagine, number one, he wants to be in Yerushalayim for the place to daven mincha by the kaisel, for his His great-great Zaydus Yahrzeit, his great Zaydus Yahrzeit for that matter, is the only Yahrzeit of any of the Gedolei HaTanach throughout all of Tanakh. No other Yahrzeit is mentioned. I know what you're going to tell me. You're going to tell me there's one other Yahrzeit, but it's not really so. If you call the assassination of Gedaliah ben Achikam the Yahrzeit of Gedaliah, no, that's not his Yahrzeit. You know, what it means is, yes, when they tell us that on, it may have been either the 2nd of Tishrei or the 3rd of Tishrei, it's not clear, by the way, what day Gedaliah ben Achikam was assassinated. There are those who say that he was assassinated on the 2nd day of the month of Tishrei, which to us became Rosh Hashanah, so that we could not fast on the 2nd day of Rosh Hashanah, so therefore every Tzom Gedaliah is a nidche to the next day. But you know, Yahrzeit doesn't mean when one... It's because of the murderers that becomes his Yahrzeit. But the only Yahrzeit that is mentioned in all of Torah, Nevi'im and Ksuvim, is Aaron HaKohen. God tells Aaron to go up, and he says, it says in Parashat Mas'ei, that it was Be'erchad HaChodesh HaChamishi, first day of the fifth month. There's got to be a connection, in addition to the fact, of course, we will see in a number of other respects, and it will come to the fore in this chapter and the next, that the Ezra is going to surround himself with symbols. The idea of leaving in the month of Nisan, he's going to end up leaving 2 days before Pesach. Can you understand? Can you imagine Jews going on Aliyah, beginning a 3-month journey 2 days before Pesach? Yeah, that's it. He wants the symbolism of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, because the Nevi'im had said that Jews are going to emerge from the exile of Bavel as they had emerged from the from Mitzrayim, and therefore it has to begin in the month of Nisan. They're most probably going to arrive at the Euphrates round about the Shvi'i Shel Pesach, so that they will be crossing the water on Shvi'i Shel Pesach. It may even be that there are times at which he held back the progress of this march to Eretz Yisrael, so that they should arrive in Yerushalayim on Rosh Chodesh. We're going to see other symbolism involved. In other words, he is turning this, for the first time, this Aliyah is an Aliyah that is enveloped in religious symbolism, because that's exactly what Ezra is going to be. Ki Ezra heichin levavo. Ezra had prepared his heart, lidrosh et Torah Hashem, to study and to teach the Torah of God, v'la asotin, people should do, u'lameid b'Yisrael chok u'mishpat, and to teach Israel chok u'mishpat, statute and law. Do you know where else we have the words chok u'mishpat? What did you say? Sham samlo chok u'mishpat v'sham nisod. This is in Parshat Bishalach. After Jews crossed the Red Sea, it says they came to Marah, the waters were bitter. God showed Moshe a stick to throw into the water, and the waters became sweet. Says the pasuk, Sham samlo chok u'mishpat v'sham nisod. There they began the study of chok and mishpat. Maybe if we have time, I'll get back to why indeed is the Yahrzeit of Aaron HaKohen the only one that is mentioned in all of Torah. But that's a separate one. There's a story to that. One morning in West Hempstead, one of our Batim comes in, and right after Davidin comes on, he says, "You know, I see the look on his face. He's got a question. He's going to ask the rabbi. You know, rabbi, I've got a question to ask you." Rabbi, why is Aaron HaKohen's Yahrzeit the only one mentioned in all of Torah? In all of Tanakh? I know he's standing over there waiting, you know. Will the rabbi know the answer to this question? And I just felt, enveloped by some minor form of Ruach HaKodesh. and they sent me down the answer in Ashamayim, and I gave this fellow I gave him an answer. How it came to me, I don't know. The guy stood there, I think he's still standing there, you know, rooted to the spot. So if you'll be good, I'll tell you the answer that I gave. All right, I'll give you the answer.
Okay.
I'll give you the answer. It is so beautiful. It's so beautiful. The Gemara at the end of Masechet Ta'anit says the following. Lo hayu yomim tovim liYisrael kichamisha asar ba'av ukiyom hakipurim. There were no greater yomim tovim by Israel than the 15th day of the month of Av and Yom Kippur. On those days, the girls would go out dancing in the vineyards, and they would say, Bachur, young man, don't look at beauty, don't look at yichus, you know, just find yourself a nice girl. Find a decent shot from that's just going to find somebody who's suited for you. And this happened on Chamisha Asar B'Av and Yom Kippur, and everybody went out with something borrowed, something blue, something old, something new. And the Mishnah lists that Bat Melech, the daughter of a king, would borrow clothing from Bat Kohen Gadol. Bat Kohen Gadol would borrow clothing from Bat Skan. In other words, the outer trappings, that's not important, it's the inner person. Then the Gemara asks, what was the great Yontif of Chamisha Asar B'Av, the 15th of Av? Gemara says, we understand the Yontif of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, Rashi says, Gemara brings it, that Yom Kippur was the day on which Torah was finally given to the Jewish people. Moshe went up on the mountain on Shavuos, 40 days and 40 nights. He receives the Luchos, then he comes down from the mountain and he shatters them because Jews are dancing around the Egel. So they haven't received Torah yet. He's going to go up a day and a half later, he's going to go up and he's going to be at the mountain again for 40 days and 40 nights until Rosh Chodesh El, where he begs God to forgive the Jewish people the sin of the Egel. And then finally God says, I have forgiven. Prepare another two sets of luchos and I will write on the second set, Solocho, Shnei luchot avanim karashonim, v'chatafti al haluchot at advarim asher, hayu al haluchot avishonim asher shibat, I will write on the second ones, that which was already on the first. And he goes up again for 40 days and 40 nights. He comes down on Yom Kippur from Rosh Chodesh Elul until Yom Kippur's 40 days. He comes down and he gives Torah to the Jewish people. So the Gemara says, we understand the great Yontif that is Yom Kippur, but what is the what's Chamisha Asar B'Av? What's so special about Chamisha Asar B'Av? The Gemara gives six different answers. I'm only going to deal with one. One answer is the following. Shekolu bo meitei midbar, those who died in the desert stopped dying. And Rashi tells us the story. After the sin of the Egel, after the sin of the Meraglim, when God said, "Bamidbar hazeh, in this desert, you will fall dead in this desert." So, ghoulish kind of story. But what happened was, anybody who was age 20 and up, every year on Tisha B'Av, they would sort of dig graves and go to sleep in the graves. Those who had more time got up the next morning, and the others remained dead in their graves. In the 40th year of the Midbar, on Tisha B'Av, all those who remained dug their graves and went to sleep. In the morning, everybody gets up. So they say, listen, maybe we miscalculated. Maybe it's not really Tisha B'Av. We were off by a day or two. They went back to their graves every night until Tu B'Av. By Tu B'Av, they see the full moon, so they knew that they hadn't made a mistake. Then they knew that the gzeir, the decree against those who were in the desert, was over. Why were those people who remained in the last year, why indeed didn't they die? Here's this guy standing over there in the Bismedrish in West Hempstead, and he's listening to me saying all of this, and he doesn't know where I'm going. So tell me, you know what Chazal say by the death of Aaron? Misas tzadikim mechaperet. The death of a tzadik is a source of atonement. And by Aaron HaKohen, it's even more so. Most fascinating is In Torah it says that when Moshe dies at the end of Torah, it says Vayifku also Yisrael, Israel mourn for him. When Aaron dies, it says Vayifku also Kol Beit Yisrael, all of Israel, all of Israel mourn for him. Aaron was the great Oreb Shalom Verodah Shalom. If all of Israel mourn for him, that means they realize the greatness of Aaron HaKohen. That in and of itself is atonement and forgiveness for sin. Therefore, we now know why those who remained in the 14th year, 9 days later, they go into their graves and they get up. So I told them that's the reason why Torah gave us the yard site of Aaron. Because unbeknownst to us, do you know when the Gzeira of that they shall all die in the desert, you know on what day it really ended? It ended on the Chodesh Av. By virtue of the fact that Jews mourned for Aaron HaKohen, that was the end of Gzeira. Not bad. Good. All right. So I'm saying it may very well be that Ezra, who surrounds himself with symbolism, wants to arrive in Yerushalayim for the yard site of Aaron HaKohen. His Seder. V'zetar shegen ha'nishtavan. This is the text of the letter Ashenatan HaMelech Artachshasta LeEzra HaKohen HaSofer, that Artachshasta the king had given to Ezra the Kohen HaSofer. Sofer, now here we are again going to have a description and a definition of Sofer. Sofer divrei mitzvot Hashem v'chukav al Yisrael. Here already we see clearly that the word Sofer does not mean scribe in the usual sense of the word, but rather over here it's saying that he is the one who counts out, transmits the words of the commandments of God and his statutes to Yisrael. He is the one who transmits. Yes, the one who is a Sofer and who writes is also going to be transmitting a document, but Ezra is the one who transmits living Torah. And here is the text, and now we're going into Aramaic, and let's see how you're going to do now. Artachshasta Melech Malchaya, Artachshasta the King of Kings, Le Ezra, to Ezra, Kohano Sofar Dota, to the Kohen, who is the scribe of the religion, Dialosh Maya, of the God of Heaven, Gemir, etc. In other words, there must be a lot of other titles by which he is known, Uche'enet, and therefore, Mini Sim Te'en. These three words you've had a number of times. Mini, from me, sim, to aim. The order is given. Dikol mitnadav b'malchuti, anybody who volunteers in my kingdom. Min amo Yisrael, from the people of Israel. From kohanohi, the kohanim v'levoye, limahach l'Yerushalayim, to go to Yerushalayim, imach with you, yahach. Let him go. Anybody who wants to go with you, permission is granted to everybody to go. I have another feeling with regard to this symbolism. And I find it in this pasuk, and the symbolism of when he leaves, why he does in fact want it to look like Yitziat Mitzrayim, because the Gemara says he may very well know it in his neshama. The Gemara says, Ilmale Olu Bimei Ezra, if Jews would have gone up en masse in the days of Ezra, as they went in the days of Yahushua, God would have done miracles for them as he did to Yahushua. Elisha, Goramachet, the sin. What sin was it? The sin was the simple one. They didn't come. Would Jews have gone en masse in the days of Ezra? God would have done great miracles for them as he did for Yahushua. Ezra wants to give his aliyah, his entry to Eretz Yisrael, he wants to make it something that straddles Moshe and Yahushua. In a sense, in order to sweep people with the symbolism of his aliyah. But there he failed. There he failed. Jews didn't heed the call. Yes?
It's a tremendous difference. Because the Jews at Yahushua's time had no alternative. And these Jews had an alternative. They were happy
enough. That's the problem. You're right. Despite the fact that the Jews, by the way, Jews in the desert also had a an alternative. How many times did they say, Nitno Rosh Vino Shuva Mitzrayim? Well, that's the point. Somebody go back to Mitzrayim. Go back to Mitzrayim. And what about the tribes of Gog and Reuven who say, well, listen, let's stay here on the East Bank. And they did. But the alternative of Bavel, though in a certain sense there were great things that were accomplished in Bavel, but all of that and more would have been accomplished in Eretz Yisrael, but they couldn't do it. And we've suffered because they couldn't do it. Kol Kavel, let's move. Kol Kavel, since Dimin Kodam Malka, from before the king, the Shivat Yo'atohi Shaliach. Shivat Yo'atohi are the seven counselors. There are in a number of places in Tanakh, we have the Shiv Asorei Paras Umadai. We have it in the Megillah, the seven, the cabinet of seven, the Mitbachon, the kitchen cabinet of Artaxasta. Since this has been agreed upon by the king and by the seven advisors, Levakora al Yehud Vili Yerushalayim, that has been decided that the Jews can to appoint Ezra. Bakora means where do we have Bakora? Who's Miriam Ben Porat? The Mevakeret Hamedina? The Mevakeret Hamedina, the ombuds person of the Levakora means he's being given power to be in charge of the Jews in Yerushalayim. This is what permission is being granted, as I say, power. But now it's not, we will see that it's not going to be political power. Levakora al Yehud v'Yerushalayim, to be the Mevaker of the Jews of Yehud, of Judea and Jerusalem, bidat elakach debiyadach. Your powers will be limited to religious powers. The religion of God that you have in your hand. In addition to the fact, he's also going to give him the powers that were given to the permission granted to the others before, that you can send money and it's tax deductible. In other words, Jews are able to transmit money from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. You can take money from anybody and you can take it across the borders. Ezra will not be granted the power to, for example, collect taxes or do anything of that sort. It's all going to be in terms of Ezra as a religious leader, but he's going to be given extremely important powers. He can punish. He can establish a Sanhedrin. He can promulgate laws. He can make takanot and gezerot. This is all being granted to him by Artaxasta. Ulehevolot safu dahab, and to bring silver and gold. The malkovi atoi, money that's being given by the king and his advisors. Because we have donated to the God of Israel, did be Yerushalem Mishkenei, that his dwelling place is in Yerushalem. In addition to that, any silver or gold that you're going to find or receive in any place, in all of the states of the realm of Bavel, together with the donations that are given by the people and the Kohanim, lebeit ol ahom di Yerushalayim, for the house of their God in Yerushalayim. Kol kavel, therefore, deno, asparna tikna, asparna, remember that from last week? Quickly, asparna, we must have had that word, I don't know how many times. Asparna, tikne bekaspa deno, you can decide what to do with that money. You can decide that power is granted to you. Tikne, you can purchase the kaspa denor, todin, dichrin, imrin, uminchaton viniskein, oxen, sheep, goats, sheep, uminchaton viniskeon, the mincha and the libations, and you can bring it as a sacrifice on the Mizbeach, the Beit HaLachom, the Yerushalayim, on the house, in the house of God that is in Yerushalayim. Umadi Allah Balachech Yetev, and whatever will be good in your eyes and the eyes of your brothers, Bishar Kaspa, V'dahavol amedet, to do with the rest of the silver and the gold. Kiru'ut ela hakom tavdun. As is the will of your God, you can do. Do whatever you want. He is not limiting them in terms of what they can do with the money. U'monayot dimitiyahavillach, monayot the kelim, the vessels that are given to you, lefolchon beit elohach, for the worship in the house of your God, hashleim kodam elohach, Yerushalayim, you should complete it, give it out, present it before God who is in Yerushalayim. U'sh'or chashchud beit elohach, and all of the other necessities of the house of God, di'ipelach limintan, that will fall upon you to give, tintan mi beit ginzei malcha, any other expenses that you're going to have, and you don't have money to cover it, you can take it from the storehouses of the king. Umini ano tachshasta malcha, and from me, I, our tachshasta, the king, sim te'ein, the law, the command has been given, l'chol gizbaraya de bi'abar nahara, to all of the treasurers that are on the other side of the river. Whatever you're going to be asked of by Ezra the Kohen, Sofar Doto de Elohoshamaya, the Sofer of the religion. You see, he's called Sofer. Now he's called Sofer Hadat, Sofer of the religion. He obviously, we cannot be talking about the fellow who's writing mezuzahs. He is a Sofer of the religion, the Elohoshamaya of the God of heaven. Whatever he asks, Osparna, what does Osparna mean? Quickly, Yid Abay, shall be done quickly. Ad Ksaf, now there is a limit. It says, Ad Ksaf Kikrin Ma, 100 bricks of silver, Vat Chintin Korin Ma, and 100 cores, that's a big measure of grain, Vat Hamar Batin Ma, wine, 100 batin, that's also a big measure of oil, of wine. Vad batin mishachma, 100 bat of oil, umalach adulokhtav, and salt, no amount is written. Koldi min tam eloha shemaya, all that is commanded to you by the God of heaven, yit abed adazda, shall be done with diligence. Adrazda lebeit Elohos Shemaya, it shall be done with diligence for the house of God of heaven. Dilemale lehevek itzaf al malchut malka ubenoi. Why should there be anger? Why should God's anger come out upon the King of Kings and his children? By the way, the King of Kings is our Tachshasta himself. He sees himself as the King of Kings. He's also going to bet on the God of heaven who is in Yerushalayim. Why does he do it? I don't know. It's most probably the result of the fact that Ezra wants to go, and that there are some Jews who want to go to Eretz Yisrael. That's going to make the difference. And therefore, when there is an awakening from below, the Zohar always says that for every itaruta de la'ela, what is necessary is an itaruta de tata. Any awakening in heaven must be preceded by an awakening on earth. We, in a sense, are the ones who send instructions to our HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Jews are ready to go, then the Rav Meir is going to help them. What it really means is, in another sense, Ezra is going to come to Eretz Yisrael and he's going to find serious, serious problems of a religious nature. The most serious problem that he's going to be dealing with is Mihu Yehudi. Who is a Jew? They're most probably the horse and buggies in Yerushalayim of his day may have had stickers on it, Am Echad, Giyur Echad. We're talking about a serious problem. There are Jews who have intermarried. Intermarriage, assimilation, children that are not Jewish is going to be one of the most serious problems that Ezra is going to face. Another reason, of course, why I mention it now is Eretz Yisrael is not built in a day. Even with Zerubbabel and Sheshbatzar and all of those who preceded Ezra, and even Ezra is not going to resolve the problem in its entirety. It will have to wait yet for Nehemiah, who's going to come later to complete the job that was begun by Ezra. It means there's a period of 115, 120 years until until some kind of religious law and order is made in Eretz Yisrael, so that one simply should not feel like, you know, we're dealing with a problem over here that's unusual. It's not unusual. The problem that we're suffering today, this week, I mean, all the pressures are being placed this week. I had a discussion with a woman before class, before you came. Unbelievable. She says that, you know, what kind of rabbi are you? I don't know how she knows a rabbi. Okay. Do I look like a rabbi? Yeah, okay. So I said Orthodox. So she says, why don't you compromise for the well-being of the Jewish people? Why don't you compromise with the conservative and reform? So I said, I would love to compromise, but I don't have the power to compromise halacha. Halacha is 3,500 years old. This is divine. It was given at Sinai. And then I told her, did you read the Jerusalem Post this morning? She says, no. So I said, well, go ahead and read the Jerusalem Post. She tells me, you know, for the well-being of the Jewish people, you just have to compromise. I said, listen, a study was made that showed that Rabbi Scherer presented this yesterday, that 100 Haredim will, by the fourth generation, will total 2,588 people. 100 Reform or Conservative Jews, four generations down the line, 13 will remain.
Jews.
13 who will identify as Jews. Whereas the same number of Haredim, and I would throw into that Datiim Lumiim, will in four generations understand what a couple will become in four generations. It will be 2,588, 100 couples. So I said, what do you mean to... She tells me, talks about preserving the Jewish people. I said, the great preservation of the Jewish people is only going to be if they all become... If I leave them go as they're going, they're going to destroy themselves. So what do you mean? And then I don't know how she got on to the next topic. I saw something. Yeah, Shank Jack. Oh yeah, yeah. I think I started the tzahar. The next tzahar was, I said, listen, for 100 years the reform movement removed every mention of Sion v'Yerushalayim from their Siddur. Excised, removed Sion v'Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael from the Siddur. Faith is Chashad. We keep learning despite the Faith is Chashad. As I said, and 20 years ago, in other words, because for all of these years they saw themselves as Germans or Frenchmen first, and then second or third as of the Mosaic religion. So that 20 years ago they decided to put Sion and Yerushalayim back into the Siddur. What were they doing? They were saying that 100 years they'd lived a mistake. Maybe they're making a mistake now when they say that if a father is Jewish, the child is Jewish. Or if they want to have lesbian marriages and 40% of their rabbis don't believe in God, maybe they're making a terrible, terrible mistake. So she said, Sion v'Yerushalayim. You're like those? I said, what do you mean? So she says, 50 years ago here we committed a terrible crime. We uprooted an indigenous people from their land. We stole the land from them. So therefore, we have to make that. We have to write that. So I said, okay. I say that we begin with Tel Aviv, yes. Tel Aviv and Haifa. Yeah, I said start with that. Let's go, because I said, what's the difference between one side of the Green Line and the second side of the Green Line? You're a Ganef there, as you are a Ganef here. What about the division of Yerushalayim? She says, of course Yerushalayim should be divided. And then she said, and you should know, I must say to my own credit. Hot-headed gold. I was calm, cool, like a cucumber. I didn't get angry until she made the next sentence. Said the next sentence. She said, "Do you understand? You know how we've treated the Arabs over here? Who came Nuremberg? Nuremberg laws.
You're an anti-Semite. You have shamed my state and my people and my government in the worst way possible. The moment you make the comparison between a democratic state of Israel, where Arabs can live better than in any of the 21 states they have in the world, and you compare us with Nuremberg laws, and you are an anti-Semite. I don't talk to anti-Semites, especially not Jewish anti-Semites." And I walked away. Not in the previous class. Oh, no. We check them at the door when they come into our table. No. We check them at the door. She was from the other side. I don't know what she was dancing, she was singing. I don't know what she was doing. What horrified me is, you know, you hear about this, but you don't meet anybody like that. You don't believe that they really are, that it really exists. I saw it. And she... I don't know. I don't guess women's ages. Huh? Israeli, yes. She's speaking to you. Yeah. I came face to face with it. I tell you, it was...
Rah, rah, rah. I think, you know, that got the tape recorder going. That got it going. Well, you know, if you're talking about that, you know what upsets me? When I wanted their help, in order to her friends. When I wanted their help to lobby Congress and Senate against Oslo, nobody home. Nobody home. Now they come running to Eretz Yisrael because we have to solve over here a problem that's theirs. Okay. Anyway. Ezra is going to have to solve an extremely serious problem. Ezra, not the purpose of our learning this all is that you shouldn't think that these problems, like today we have these problems. Ezra is going to come up against Kohanim who have married out of the faith, and not only that, they're going to list all of the various nations from whom Shiksas had come over here. It's amazing that such a thing could have happened. And you know how it happened? It happened after I don't know, 70, 80 more years, 100 years of Jews in Babel. That's how it happened. And it happened and even amongst those who had come on Aliyah. You understand? Even those who came on Aliyah, they brought their non-Jewish wives to on Aliyah too. All right. Okay. So that was for you. Everything, in other words, when they talk about the problem of Soviet Jewry as though this was a problem created by modern Zionism, it's not true. They had the same problem in the days of the Nevi'im, the same problem. And over here, you know, in the religious community, they're going to blame it all on the Zionists. We have to bring those goyim from Russia. 30% are going, 40% are going. That was the problems. You know what the problems are? What we're going to learn is they have to be dealt with. And we need tremendous wisdom, and we need tremendous siyata d'shmaya to know how to deal with them. I say even Ezra, who had all of that, was not able to resolve the problem in its entirety. It's a problem that lingered, and it lingered. And if 100 or 50 years later there's a new onslaught, which is Hellenism, so there'll be a new problem that's going to come. And that new problem is going to have to be dealt with too. Unfortunately, life is solving problems. There's no way to expect that, you know, all of a sudden we're going to have a perfect Medina. Porush will be prime minister, and finish. It's not the way it is. That's just not the way it is. All right, good. I got that out of my system. Let's go.
But now you got us going.
That's right. Okay. So you go home and you make trouble at all? Pasuk Chaf Dalet. Pasuk Chaf Dalet. Ulecham Lahudin. And to you, I let you know. Now hear this. Dikol kohanaya delevoye zamoraya toroaya nitinaya ufoche beit elohodana mindabalovahalachlo shalitli mimalaya. Don't you know mindabalovahalach? Mindabalovahalach are the three kinds of taxes. All of these people are exempt from taxes. To you, I let you know that all the Kohanim, the Levim, the singers in the Beit HaMikdash, Tora'aya, are the gatekeepers, Netinaya, the Netinim who work in the Beit HaMikdash, Ufolchei Beit HaLahadana, and the ones who serve God in this temple, Minda below the halach, those were the three different kinds of taxes that were placed. La Shalot L'Mirnialem. Nobody can place those taxes. They are tax exempt. Free paying taxes. You understand we're talking about like religious institutions. At least in America anyway, don't have to pay taxes. Vahamta Ezra, and you Ezra, Techachmas El Kod Gubiyadach. As is the wisdom of God in your hand, here comes the most important part of this letter. Meni Shaftal judges and Dayanim, Dilehevin Donim, who will judge L'chol Amadi V'Avar Nahara. You have the power to judge all of the people who live on the other side of the river, from the Euphrates. Stop.